This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, Sharp Money underway on this Tuesday, July 30th. It's deadline day. Joe Serralo here in for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, man, I know that you can't wait. I can't wait. We are on air for the 3 hours, the final 3 hours leading up to Major League Baseball's trade deadline, man. It's going to be a fun one. How are you today?
Joseph Serralo. I had to do it. Had to bring out the Jason Derulo. Look, it's a big day. It's one of my favorite days of the year. There's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of movement. But I like when teams reward their fans by going for it right now, right? Getting those additional pieces, put them over the top, get the depth. And a lot of times, you and I have lived this before, a player you add at the trade deadline could catapult you deep into the postseason. We saw that with Yoenis Cespedes. I'd also warn people, though, we saw it on the other side as Mets fans with Victor Zambrano and Chris Benson at one point. So it can go either way, but I do like that today there's the potential for chaos because every day I wake up and that's what I root for.
You know, Victor Zambrano and Chris Benson, those are guys that were from like the first years I ever started watching baseball. I don't know why, Dustin, I have the most vivid memory of watching Victor Zambrano pitch. And that deal was obviously a big deal. You know, we sent Scott Kazmir to Tampa Bay for him. And I didn't know that at the time. I mean, I must have been 4 or 5 years old. But I've got this vivid memory of being at Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut on like a weekend trip with my parents, watching the game. My parents would take turns. One would go down and gamble. The other would stay in the hotel room with me. And I'm watching a game with my dad, and Zambrano's on the bump. And I'm like 4 or 5 years old, brand new to watching baseball, or at least, you know, that's one of my furthest back memories of watching baseball. And I turn to my dad and I go, "This guy stinks. Why is he such a big deal?"
Well, we'll move on to today's moves in a second. But Victor Zambrano was the ace of a bad Tampa Bay team. And yeah. The word was Rick Peterson, a bit of a weird guy, was the pitching coach for the Mets, supposed guru. And the quote that made the rounds that day was they made that trade because he told management, "Give me 10 minutes and I can fix him." I guess they never got around to having those 10 minutes to chat.
Yeah, that's wild because I just have the worst memories of Zambrano. But right, Cespedes, to your point, man, you know, I was working for the Mets that year. It was my first season working for them, just doing like low-level customer service stuff. I was in high school. My dad had worked for the Mets for a dozen years. So, you know, I was living the dream, right? 16, 17 years old, going to work for my favorite team. And I'll just never forget when you talk about deadline day, the buzz that was going around the ballpark that day. We pulled in, you know, it was a 4 p.m. deadline then, Eastern time. We pulled into the employee lot at 3:50, and it was just the energy was palpable at Citi Field, right? There were rumors. You knew a big deal was in the works. And then, bam, I see my phone. As I'm, like, clocking in, Cespedes is a Met. The Nationals are coming to town that night. Obviously, that night was the Wilmer Flores walk-off. And the rest is history. But that's what's beautiful about deadline day in baseball that no other sport compares to. The NFL, the NBA, the trade deadlines are nowhere near what they are in baseball in terms of the level of excitement and the level of hope. We've got a small trade here. The Yankees sending Caleb Ferguson to the Astros. That's just breaking news that popped up. Yeah. But the excitement surrounding the MLB deadline is just so different from any other sport. And it's a really fun special day, especially if you get to be at the ballpark as a fan, as an employee on deadline day, you feel the energy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was a big momentum shift. I'll remember, again, you were really young for this one, but it led to the Boston Red Sox breaking the curse. They got rid of Nomar Garciaparra, three-way deal. They bring back Orlando Cabrera to play shortstop. Cabrera was a much better defender than Garciaparra. It made a difference. It impacted that team, and he was a key piece in them breaking the curse of the Bambino. So there are special trades in the history of the MLB trade deadline that could make a difference here. Maybe teams are on the cusp of making a big one. I have a watch list. Before we get off the air today, I have a group of players that are supposed to get traded, and then I have some of the long shots that I think may or may not, unless someone's willing to pony up. My watch list likely to get dealt, Joe. Jack Flaherty from the Tigers. Yandy Diaz from the Rays. Tanner Scott from the Marlins. Surprised Miami's made a couple trades with teams who needed bullpen help. They have not included Tanner Scott in the deals. Kyle Finnegan from Washington, Luis Renifo from the Angels, and Taylor Ward from the Angels. The long shot category, Garrett Crochet because of the contract demands, Tarek Skubal, Luis Robert, Brett Rooker, and maybe even our old friend Michael Conforto could be on the move from San Francisco. We'll see.
Hey now. Conforto to the Mets? I mean, do we put that into the universe? Probably not after the Winker deal. Yeah. But I will say Scott from the Marlins, that's the guy personally as a fan. He is the guy on top of my wish list for the Mets. I think he's the guy on top of everyone's wish list because everyone needs bullpen arms, and he's undoubtedly the best one out there with Estevez going to Philly.
Well, and the Baltimore Orioles could have used his services. They just made a deal a little bit before we hit the air, and Tanner Scott was not included in the deal. Now, Tanner Scott is a guy that they know well. He came up in their system. He is a former Oriole who has thrived now down in South Beach in a more prominent role in that bullpen. But before we hit the air, Baltimore acquired left-hand pitcher Trevor Rogers from Miami. They send a couple of massive prospects back, Joe. You and I are on the same side of this. It feels like a gross overpay. Now, I will warn you. Go to Google right now, Joe. Look up the name Dallas McPherson. I am the guy who was making the rounds telling people back in the day, Dallas McPherson's going to hit 40 home runs regularly in the major leagues. Dallas McPherson was nothing more than a platoon corner infielder who barely lasted in the majors. But
18 homers on his career.
Marlins get Connor Norby, who's hitting .297, 16 homers, 13 steals in AAA, and Kyle Stowers, an outfielder, 18 homers in AAA, for Trevor Rogers, who slots right in there as the fourth starter for Baltimore now.
Yeah, so let's take a look at this deal. First off, I don't know if you saw my tweet. I wish this happened a week ago because Connor Norby killed me with my Orioles run line play in Miami last week when he tripped in the ninth inning charging a routine grounder that would have been two outs, bases empty in the ninth inning up 6-3. So I wish this happened a week ago that Norby was out of Baltimore. But he's all kidding aside, a tremendous prospect, right? Preseason, he was fifth ranked in the Orioles system. Stowers is interesting because 2 years ago, he was a top 10 prospect for Baltimore. He came in eighth on the preseason rankings in 2022. Cup of coffee in the big leagues last year, didn't do much. Cup of coffee in the big leagues this year, didn't do much. In AAA, though, pretty much a home run every three games, showing tremendous pop for AAA Norfolk. Of course, the old AAA team of the New York Mets. So Stowers and Norby, I wouldn't say Stowers could get this done on his own. I thought Norby for Rogers that this would be a one-for-one done deal on its own, and Stowers could maybe be a throw-in for a Crochet deal or something else that Baltimore might have in the works. To me, Baltimore got fleeced in this one, Dustin. This is a massive overpay for a 2-9 starter with an ERA up near 5.
Now, I will say this, though, in defense of Baltimore, this might be telling us what this starting pitcher market is. Because there's so many teams in the mix for these additional wild card spots, I think we're used to gauging this market based on how teams used to buy or sell at this point when fewer teams were postseason bound. We have a lot of teams in both the American League and especially the National League that could make a run here late in the year and grab that sixth final wild card spot. And I think because of that, these teams that have starting pitchers to trade and available in the market, they're asking for a lot. That's why I don't think Garrett Crochet is going to get moved on top of his contract demands. I think the cost in this pitcher market is higher than we're used to seeing because there are so many teams that want to add that. So it's competitive. It's going to be tough to make a deal. And in defense of the Orioles, that could be the case here. I actually like the player. Aside from what they gave up, I think Trevor Rogers is a very solid depth piece in that rotation. Now Albert Suarez can move into a swingman role, and he throws really hard. I'm curious how he may be as a multi-inning reliever in the playoffs. But I do think I like what Baltimore's done to strengthen their rotation. It's gotten longer. They have more pros in there. They don't have to throw Dean Kramer in the playoffs, which is a massive victory for this organization. And all of a sudden, a series sets up with Burns, Rodriguez, Eflin, and maybe Trevor Rogers if you have to go to a fourth starter. I don't think that's horrible on a playoff team. I think he is a fourth starter, and he's okay at that.
Yeah, I just don't think that if Eflin and Rogers are your big rotation bolsters that Baltimore, it might, you know, be taken as seriously come October as if they went all in.
I'm going to disagree there, Joe, because they have an ace. They have a clear-cut ace. Rodriguez has the upside of a 2. He's somewhere between a 2 and a 3. Go look around baseball. Who's got those rotations with the multiple aces right now to throw at them? I think this is a very realistic rotation, especially when you factor in the lineup that goes with it.
Yeah, well, the lineup that goes with it is a plus, but if you're going up against Seattle, you're getting outpitched. If you're going up against the Yankees, we'll see. Cole and Hill, when they're on, are a better 1-2 than Burns and Grayson Rodriguez. Burns, I think, is the best of the four, but Cole and Hill, when they're on, can be better, both better than Grayson Rodriguez. I just think Rodriguez is young. I don't think he's reliable. I'd rather see him as the three. I don't like Zach Eflin as much as you do. I really wanted to see another ace up there with Burns, number one, and, you know, maybe a Crochet, number two. Skubal, I don't think Detroit's moving. I've been saying this. 2.5 years of control. Why would you move him? It seems like Skubal's going to be staying put in Detroit. By the way, another starter was just moved, Dustin. He hasn't pitched yet this year, but Alex Cobb going from San Francisco to Cleveland. Cobb has been, for the last three seasons, 2021 with the Angels, the last two with San Fran, pretty much the definition of like a solid mediocre number three, number four guy, right? He's 22-18 across the last three seasons, 74 starts. So it's 25 starts a season and an ERA of 3.8, never getting lower than 3.7 or higher than 3.9. He's been pretty consistent and Cleveland needs consistency in their rotation because Cookie Carrasco has been a disaster. Tristan McKenzie has been a disaster. Anything outside of Tanner Bibee, the Guardians really have been struggling with their starting pitching. So if Alex Cobb can come back soon, he could slot in a three or four slot in that rotation.
Yeah, I like this. He's a very solid guy when he's available throughout his career. But what's odd is, like, whoever thought the Guardians would have to add pitching? Like, that was the strength of this team for so long. Now they're an aggressive offensive team, and they have to trade and acquire other people's pitchers. It's a weird, weird world we're living in.
The bullpen is atop the league. The rotation's one of the worst. We've got a great guest lineup today. Adam Burke joins us for a half hour. David Samson from CBS Sports HQ joining us, and my guy, Anthony Recker, all for the MLB trade deadline. Don't go anywhere. You're locked in to Sharp Money. We're releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide this Thursday. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, and more. So sign up before the end of July and receive both the college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily Pro Picks, 24/7 video, and more, all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of just $1.75. Or you can sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to offer to up your betting game. Don't miss out on these preseason deals. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. As Sharp Money moves along on deadline day, 2 hours, 45 minutes to go until the MLB trade deadline. Joe Cirillo here in for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, we had some late moves last night that kind of flew under the radar because of the time that they came in. How about the Dodgers for the second straight year making a move to acquire our old friend, former New York Met, Amed Rosario?
Look, I like this move on a couple fronts. One, the Dodgers don't want to play Mookie Betts at shortstop anymore when he comes back from injury. That's one thing. They like him better at second base in the outfield. So that's a starter. But they have a ton of versatility once Tommy Edman is activated off the IL with guys like Chris Taylor in that lineup. I'm big on in the playoffs. You can't have enough guys who can play second, short, and center field up the middle and play it well. All of a sudden, they have a lot of great options, which gives them the opportunity to put the best lineup out there based on the arm they're seeing, righty or lefty, each day. I really like the depth piece that Rosario brings. He's a guy who can make a lot of contact at time. He's really good against lefties and, again, super versatile off that bench. I think it's a great depth piece for the Dodgers, who remain +330, the favorite to win the World Series.
Yeah, it's intriguing to me that they're the favorite on that board. I know Philadelphia has struggled coming out of the All-Star break, but I mean, we saw it when these two played each other not too long ago. To me, the Phillies are still the best team in the National League. It's almost like how you pay the Yankee tax when you bet the Yankees, right? It feels like there's a bit of a Dodger tax worked in there as well, because I would say the two best teams in baseball right now are the Phillies and the Orioles, but they're not priced that way in their respective leagues. Dustin, another late night move. Jorge Soler returning to Atlanta, where he was dealt a few years ago, and the Braves went on, of course, unfortunately, to win the World Series. Do you think Soler can provide that kind of push for an Atlanta team again that was four games up on the five seed a minute and a half ago, and now we've got a virtual tie for the four seed?
I mean, Jorge Soler and Marcelo Zuna, I'd like both of them to play the field at once, one in right, one in left. It'd be one of the worst defensive outfields of all time. But what he can do, Jorge Soler, he can hit bombs, and he crushes left-handed pitching for his career. That's the reason why they're adding him, create another platoon situation. Back in 21 when they lost Ronald Acuna Jr. and won the World Series, he and Eddie Rosario split time and honestly combined were one of the most productive left field pieces you could see out there in Major League Baseball, Joe. I don't know what Jorge Soler is in terms of being an impact bat right now. I think it's an interesting move, but if I'm the Braves, I'm adding pitching. I am adding every starting pitcher I can get my hands on right now. The offense should wake up and should play well in a short series because of the power that's there, despite them being down across the board for the season. Jorge Soler just is a weird move for me. They're throwing back the clock because it worked one time, but they're also bailing the San Francisco Giants out of a really bad contract. That's the biggest thing that jumps out to me. San Francisco got a multi-year deal done with Jorge Soler in the offseason, and now all of a sudden, that's off their books, and they can be more flexible this year.
Yeah, it definitely is an interesting deal for Atlanta because, like you said, now they're locking into multiple years, and this is a team that already has a DH in Ozuna. So now you're forcing Soler to go into the outfield. Is he going to take at-bats and take games away from a guy like Adam Duvall, who, of course, I would say Soler probably a better hitter at this point in his career than Duvall, but Adam Duvall is a Gold Glove winner. So Atlanta's going to have to pick their spots. All right, do we want Soler's bat today? Do we want Duvall's glove today? Is the lineup deep enough that we can put Duvall in there and improve the defense? Are we desperate? Do we have to throw Soler in there at right field, a guy who I don't think has ever had a positive defensive runs above replacement?
No.
I think that number's been negative his entire career. I believe Mark DeRosa was joking about it earlier today. This is his best year because it's NA. He hasn't played the field this year.
Yeah, and we've seen what Marcelo Zuna does on fly balls, right? Jumps up on the fence, misses them back in the day with St. Louis. It would be a bad defensive outfield. That it would be a bad sign for them. I want to throw a couple trades your way because I think this one went way under the radar last night. The Guardians, a little bit after we got off the air, added Lane Thomas from the Nationals, an absolute lefty masher. What do you think he brings to Cleveland?
I mean, he brings 2020 capabilities with him. Are we going to get the Lane Thomas of last year or the Lane Thomas of this year? Slight down year for Lane Thomas, despite the fact that the Nats have been pesky for a while. They were there in that mix of wild card teams in the National League. I like this kid. You saw him today. I think they put him in the two slot right behind Kwan in that lineup. He might be able to have some success there hitting between Kwan and Jose Ramirez because he's going to get pitches to hit if they keep him in that two slot. I certainly think this is a deal with a lot of upside. Even though he's underperformed a tad this year, I love this trade because that lineup, that team, that organization, you're going to get the best out of him making this deal. And I don't think they gave up the moon for him.
No.
I think it was a fairly reasonable price.
28 years old, plays a good right field, coming off a season a year ago, hit .268, 28 homers, 20 steals, also scored 101 and drove in 86. So, I mean, across the board, that's a super productive season in what was a really bad Nats lineup a year ago. I love this addition. Another one I want to throw at you. We were outraged about the Orioles trade earlier for Trevor Rogers. How about what Houston gave up for Yusei Kikuchi? What are we doing here? You look at the details of this trade, Joe. I can't believe it took this much to get it done. Jake Bloss, who pitched yesterday. Lo Perfido, the first base outfielder, who's a prospect. And Will Wagner, the son of Billy Wagner, who's an infielder in the minor league system. All for Yusei Kikuchi, an overpaid left-hander that's been a auto fade for bettors across the last few seasons. What am I missing here?
Yeah, first off, I hate that Will Wagner goes in that deal because it's just so wrong. Billy Wagner was obviously, we loved him as a Met. He was an incredible Astro. And for the Astros to deal his son, there's just something so fundamentally wrong with that. Kikuchi stinks. I can't believe this price. You know, you mentioned it with Bloss. He was scheduled to start yesterday, got scratched and pulled because of the trade, obviously. But Kikuchi, you know, I saw him firsthand. I was just talking about this game I went to a year ago. It was like my first Easter out here in Los Angeles. And, my family's back in New York. I said, hey, what am I going to do? oh, I'm going to go to an Angels game. And I was able to go front row behind the dugout for $40 because of the holiday. And it was Kikuchi versus Detmers. And the final score was 13-12. That tells you all you need to know. I mean, Ohtani sent one to the moon in the first inning. Like, it was a hell of a game to go to. But that's Kikuchi, right? He's a BP pitcher. He stinks. His best years are certainly behind him. I don't like that deal one bit for the Astros, especially, I mean, the prices that we're seeing and the Rogers deal and the Kikuchi deal. I'm at the point where I'd be like, you know what? I'll take my chances with Spencer Arrighetti.
Yeah.
You know,
honestly,
into the fourth spot.
Think about yesterday. We started the show with the three-way trade, right? With the Dodgers, the White Sox, and the Cardinals. Eric Fetty was a steal for the Cardinals. I believe they gave up was Tommy Edman in the trade, and they get Eric Fetty back and Tommy Pham. I think you jump first in the market, you do your own thing, and everyone else has to adjust with that one piece out there. It sounds like a lot. I know Milwaukee was in on Fetty, but like, you have Milwaukee trading for Frankie Montas. Frankie Montas, it's been a minute since he's been productive.
He can get that little split piece work in there in Milwaukee. He could see some things. I'm curious what Milwaukee feels like they can do with starting pitching right now, because you saw the deal for Savali, who was having a terrible year for Tampa Bay. They went out and get Savali. They go out and get Montas, who was having a terrible year for Cincinnati. So the Brewers, obviously, there's something in their scouting department where they see, you know, other pitchers with promise and they see a good price, because Milwaukee, you know, it's a small market operation. And they're like, hey, let's take a flyer on these guys. We've lacked starting pitching thus far. No Woodruff, no Burns, Freddy Peralta after a great April having a down year. And we're in first place against all odds. So why not take a cheap flyer, add Montas, add Savali, and see what the hell we can do. And it's very intriguing to me. I think it was a great price. I think Montas, you know, when he's on, he's a guy who can go 7 and strike out 10. He hasn't been on too much this year. But I think at that price, it was certainly a smart trade.
Sure.
One of the better prices, like Eric Fetty, that we've seen out there so far.
Sure. I mean, look, Frankie Montas is a back end of the guy with the upside to have ace stuff, but it's just been a long time and a lot of injuries in the way. The Brewers are fascinating. They're 7 games up in the Central. Christian Yelich's back is awful, where there's talks of him shutting it down and having surgery. Like, that's been going on for 2 years, hanging over this organization, but they keep winning. Why that front office is just such next level in their preparation and how they're breaking down the analytics. And when they go after a guy like Frankie Montas, to your point, you have to question if they see something the rest of the league doesn't in him.
Yeah, just like what they saw with Savali. They see some untapped potential there, which is different because Savali's young and Montas is obviously a veteran. But they feel like there's something there. They can almost revert back to his Oakland days. Obviously, the ballpark factor helped him there. But we'll see what he does in Milwaukee. More deals to get to. Our guy Adam Burke joining the show up next. I can't wait to talk with Adam about his baseball bets, the deadline, and the college football betting guide right here on Sharp Money. Don't go anywhere. Sharp Money moving along on deadline day. Joe Serralo here in for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And folks, you've been hearing us talk about and promote the new college football betting guide ad nauseum. So why don't we welcome in the brains behind it? Let's hit the progressive guest line and get our VSiN managing editor in here. You might know him for his daily MLB winners, guaranteed winners every day. Adam Burke. Adam, how you doing, man? It's great to have you on.
All right, couple things. First of all, definitely not guaranteed winners. It's been a really rough baseball season. So honestly, the college football guide has been a really, really nice distraction to get ready for that upcoming season. Should have a proof in my hands here in the not too distant future. So we'll be able to do our final editing process with that. But guys, before we jump into what we want to talk about today, I just want to send my condolences out to the family and friends of Dave Koken, you know, a Vegas legend here in the sports betting industry, a guy who I had the privilege of meeting a few times, of doing some stuff with, you know, at Wager Talk in the past. Very, very gracious towards me, very gracious with his time. A lot of respect for Dave Koken, and I wish him and his family all the best during this tough time.
An absolute legend, paved the way for a lot of people to do what we're doing today. I know a lot of people who listen to the show are used to seeing Scott Spreitzer join us on Wednesdays. Obviously, Scott and Dave go back a long time in this town, kind of setting the standard for how to do betting broadcasting, right, and cover it the way he did. And Dave Koken, right up until the end, still placing a lot of bets, living in this world, doing his thing, and will be sadly missed by all of us.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Absolutely. You know, I sorry to interrupt, Joe, but, you know, I reached out to a couple of his, you know, a couple of the people over at Wager Talk, and, you know, one of the big things I think that gave them, you know, a bit of solace in this whole thing is that Dave very much went out on his terms.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of decided how the end of his life was going to be. And as you mentioned, you know, kind of betting right up until the end. So, you know, a guy that definitely had a tremendous impact, as you mentioned, on the media side of sports betting and on a lot of people who, you know, are in our network, our colleagues, all that kind of thing. So, you know, once again, rest in peace, Dave.
Really, really well said there, Adam. Let's get into this college football betting guide that you've been working incredibly hard to have ready, I believe, later this week.
Thursday.
If we can get that out on Thursday.
Real quick, before we get into the details of it, Adam, it's a difficult task to get everyone here in line to submit their stuff. I need to know the progress report. How did we do as a staff? Was everyone on top of the deadlines? Did some people get things done early? Like, I need the assessment. Who was the last one you're waiting for to submit their picks?
Yeah, call them out if you're still waiting.
I'll tell you guys what. We have over 50 best bets from VSiN hosts and writers and contributors here in our upcoming college football guide that, as you mentioned, Dustin, comes out on Thursday. So, you know what? We got pretty much everybody. There were a few people that didn't fill out their spreadsheets. We of course had some people on vacations as well and stuff like that. So, you know, it's been an interesting month. A lot of people with time off, of course, you know, VSiN going back independent under Musburger Media. And we had some transition in terms of our emails and stuff like that. So, you know, I appreciate everybody's patience with, you know, all the emails that I had to send out, you know, making sure that everybody knew where to put the stuff that they were contributing. But you know what? This guide really illustrates the great team that we have here at VSiN and why all of us, you know, subscribers, potential subscribers, viewers, listeners, everybody involved, you should be excited about the future here of what our co-owner Bill 80 called VSiN 3.0, because this guide showcases what we can do when all of us come together on a project. I think it's going to come in close to 200 pages. I haven't seen the proof yet, but when you preview 134 teams, you know, that takes up a pretty big chunk, but you guys are going to be very, very excited to get this guide in your hands on Thursday, and I'm very excited to put it out.
Look, I'm pumped for it, not just because you asked us to write for it. That was also, I was trying to get you to say, Joe and Dustin, thank you so much for being on top of it and getting in way before the deadline. But really, Adam, they say in colleges that the arts and the athletics are the kind of the face of those colleges. That's how people learn what's in their backyard, what these universities are all about. And I think when it comes to VSiN, our betting guides are kind of showcase the best of us. They showcase what we do that makes us unique in the market. The NFL guide, which you had everyone put together a while ago now, that's been out there and available for download. And now this college guide. And let me tell you, breaking down the college world has gotten a lot tougher for all of us. So let's dive into some of the info. One piece of info I wanted to throw your way, because I am a Miami fan. And I'm a little bit nervous because when I looked, 8 people picked FSU, 3 people chose Clemson, but over Clemson, we have 5 experts on my Canes this year. Why should I be terrified when Mario Cristobal's in charge?
Yeah, and I think something that's important to point out real quick based on what you said there is, you know, we don't have to worry about keeping lines of communication open with coaches or SIDs or athletic departments, anything like that. You know, we're not going to blow smoke up anybody's backside here with these teams and our evaluations of them. You know, this is going to be unbiased, better focused content. So I think that's something that's a really big benefit of our guide compared to the other guides that are out there in the market. But look, I think a lot of it, Dustin, in the ACC just simply comes down to the fact that Dabo Swinney has this portal protest. You know, he refuses to bring in guys that could help his roster. And I think they have needs on the offensive line. I think that the brain drain of losing several coordinators, you know, at least, you know, the two main coordinators for Dabo, has been a big deal. I mean, Wes Goodwin's defense was really good last year, but I'm not convinced that Cade Klubnik is a guy. I don't think that he's a dude. I don't know that he's going to be, you know, one of the upper echelon quarterbacks here in this conference for this season. And if he's not, I don't think that Clemson, you know, a team that seems to be going in reverse a little bit, is going to be better than the Florida States or the Miamis of the world. So I am one of those people that, you know, did take a look at Miami. I do like them quite a bit for this season. Bringing in Cam Ward and Damian Martinez from the portal just shows the advantages that the portal can provide that Clemson isn't really reaping the benefits of. So, look, I think there's something to be said about believing in your program and using your NIL money to keep your guys around. At the same time, there's something to be said about getting really talented players into your program that are experienced and can help you out. Miami and, you know, some degree Florida State as well. Both of those teams did that. Clemson really did not.
Yeah, I love the Hurricanes this year only because, Adam, I'm a bit of a Cam Ward truther. I've been watching him since he was at Incarnate Word. And, you know, I said if he goes to Ohio State, he's winning the Heisman. He didn't. He went to Miami. I think being on the Hurricanes might hurt him a little bit in the Heisman market, just because, you know, your team success matters there. And going 9-3, it's going to be hard to win the Heisman if they go 9-3, 10-2, don't win a conference championship versus an SEC or a Big Ten potential conference champion. But when we look at the ACC, obviously with the four power conferences, right, there's a tier one, the SEC and the Big Ten, and then there's the ACC and the Big 12 on that next tier below. I want to shift to the Big 12. I got my my Colorado coffee mug right here. Do we think the Buffs can go bowling this year? It looked like a pretty grueling schedule to me. They're over under set at 5.5. What do we think about Colorado this season?
Well, I think the tough thing about Colorado, Joe, is to some degree you have a stars and scrubs unit, right? Shedeur Sanders is elite. Travis Hunter is obviously an incredible player. And they have some other guys who are, you know, top tier talent. They're going to have a really big impact. At the same time, I mean, you know, Deion tried as hard as he could to go into the portal and get some offensive line help for this team. We'll see if that gels. We'll see if that all comes together. Personally, in my power rating projections, I have Colorado down for 5.38 wins. So I have them right now being more like a 5-7 team as opposed to a 6-6 team. I think a lot of it will simply come down to health, first of all, but then also the offensive line and those guys that they brought in. You know, are they going to be impactful enough to keep Shedeur from running for his life on every single play? I think that's the big question in Boulder.
Yeah, and the Big 12 feels like the Wild West. I really feel like the Big 12 is so up for grabs. You could convince me four or five teams could win it. Just with Texas and Oklahoma leaving, it's wide open. I delayed this because I wanted to save it for last. You are an Ohio State fan. And when you look at our experts, so I would put our college football betting experts up against anyone in the country. You, Matt Eumanns, Wes Reynolds, like it's a different echelon when it comes to breaking down these teams. Well, the majority picked by this group of people to win the national championship was your Ohio State Buckeyes. Does that make you nervous?
Oh, well, no, not necessarily. I just look, I mean, Ohio State, not only the talent that they brought in, but also how you got so many guys to stick around in Columbus, how you got the Travion Hendersons to stick around, Emeka Egbuka, how you got a guy like Quinshon Judkins to come in when he knows that Travion Henderson is there. Ohio State really leveled up. They spent some money on players. They spent some money on transfers. And they also spent some money on upgrading their coordinator with Chip Kelly. And I think the biggest upgrade for Ohio State this season is not going to be anything from a player standpoint. I think it's going to be that Ryan Day is no longer calling plays and that Chip Kelly is on the offensive side. I don't like Day as a play caller. I don't like Day trying to be a play caller while also make good decisions on third and fourth down, stuff like that. I thought a lot of his third and short, fourth and short play calls last year were very unimaginative, very low percentage plays. I think Kelly is going to upgrade some of those things for Ohio State. I do think it's tricky. They got to go to Eugene October 12th. Hopefully that'll be a birthday present for me because my birthday is October 11th. Hopefully the Buckeyes will, you know, take care of business in that game. If they do, they win the Big Ten. If they don't, I think Oregon wins the Big Ten. But Ohio State, from a top-end talent standpoint, I mean, they're up there as, you know, number one or number two in the country. So it makes sense that people are high on them for this season.
Adam, in 15 seconds or less, are you buying Will Howard for the Heisman?
No. No, I think they're going to run the football a lot with Henderson and Judkins. That's going to take away from Howard.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's great analysis. This is a team that can certainly win a championship with Howard, but personally, I'm not buying the Will Howard Heisman hype. I don't think he'll put up the accolades and stats necessary for that. From the gridiron to the diamond, when we come back, Adam's staying with us. Don't go anywhere. You're locked into Sharp Money. Head over to VSiN.com right now to check out some of our great exclusive articles like Adam Burke's Daily Baseball Winners, Best Bets, Betting Splits, exclusive articles, and more only on VSiN.com. Head there today. As Sharp Money moves along, we get ready to wrap up hour one here of the program. Myself, Joe Cirillo, in for Patrick Maher today alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And, oh, hey, the guy I just mentioned, Adam Burke, joined in the show for the second great segment now as we shift gears from the college football betting guide and the gridiron to the diamond. Adam, you have a baseball play that you like here on deadline day.
I do. It's been a very rough baseball season. And honestly, now I kind of get the feeling over the last few days, the baseball seems different. Offense is up and we're seeing just mammoth home runs over the last few days. Yeah. So I don't know if maybe the humidor settings have been messed with, or I don't know, maybe we got a new batch of balls. I don't know, but this, it's been a mental block that I've had problems getting over the last couple of seasons here. And this season, it's definitely affected me. It's been a rough year. That being said, today is a really hard day, right? Bunch of guys getting traded, dudes on pins and needles, wondering what's going to happen. Some teammates will lose friends, some friends will lose teammates, all these kinds of things. So it's a difficult day for the human side of baseball. But I do think that, you know, Jeffrey Springs comes back tonight for Tampa Bay, and it's going to be very emotional for him, his first start since April of last year. And Edward Cabrera is a guy who he'll have 115 pitches in like four innings in this game. So I think it's going to be kind of tricky for Springs to get settled in, coming back to the big leagues. Miami, although they just traded Josh Bell and Jazz Chisholm, they're a top five team in weighted on base average here in the second half so far. So I like them over 1.5 for their first five team total at plus money. I think that they can get to Springs a little bit. I think Springs may have some issues settling down, maybe some issues turning that lineup over as well. So we'll see what Miami's able to do in that one. But, you know, I tried to keep it very light today with a lot of moving parts. I mean, you know, and then also not trade related, but we just saw Gerrit Cole get scratched from his start for the Yankees due to general body fatigue.
Yeah, I have that every day, bro. Welcome to life in your 30s. For those that don't know, what Joe Rogan is to the pyramids, Adam Burke is to Major League Baseball's actual baseballs, always conspiring of what they're doing behind the scenes to manipulate them. Doesn't believe the surface level answers we're getting from them. Just always has a conspiracy going. Just want to warn everyone about that. But let's
hold on, Dustin. I am 100% in agreement with Adam on this. So, you know, we've discussed, Dustin, I do a lot of the Saturday shows, the Live Bet Saturdays with Jared Smith, who is a Nerfy Yerfy aficionado. And Yerfy rates on Saturdays are through the roof. And part of this, I've been saying all year, and Jared calls me a conspiracy theorist, is I believe that there might be a juiced batch of balls they're subbing in for Saturday games, because Saturday is the best day of the week for attendance, best day of the week for viewership on TV. They want offense up. I am with Adam on this.
Look,
1,000%
look,
with Paul.
Look, I'm a big conspiracy guy. Look up the Anunnaki. I believe a lot of that stuff. I believe in like these ancient civilizations. So it doesn't take much. But maybe let's factor in this. I don't know, guys. Most people work a Monday through Friday, right? They wake up on Saturday morning because they don't have work. They are rested, right, throughout the week. Is there a chance that maybe baseball players at Friday into a Saturday, they wake up and they're a little bit more rested on the weekend? Maybe the day game plays a role in this. Like, there's other aspects at play when it comes to the ball flying out on the weekends.
Juice ball.
I agree with the day game. I agree with the day game theory. That makes a lot of sense, especially, you know, here during the heat of summer. But I will say, last night, 12 games, I think there was one day game because of a doubleheader. But last night, you know, yesterday, 12 games, 11-1 to the over. And the game that didn't go over, it was a total of 9. It landed on 8. That game had 4 home runs in it. So, look, I mean, it was hotter a couple of weeks ago. And it's been hot throughout the month of July everywhere, as we, you know very well here in Vegas. But, I mean, I don't know. It seems like offense has kind of taken a little bit of an upturn, specifically from a power standpoint. It may be something. It may be nothing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't put it past Major League Baseball when you're getting overshadowed by the Olympics and also you have football season coming up.
Sure. Because of that, starting pitching is always at a premium, especially guys who miss bats. And it seems like a lot of the aces in the trade deadline in the market are not being dealt, perhaps because the asking prices are crazy. Let's touch on a couple deals before we let you go. Stay in Miami, where the Marlins acquired two awesome prospects from Baltimore, Connor Norby and Kyle Stowers, for just Trevor Rogers. Were you shocked at both of those prospects going down to the Marlins for a guy like Trevor Rogers, who's really what at best a 3, but more between a 4 and a 5?
Well, there's a lot to unpack with this deal specifically. I mean, first of all, Rogers is a guy who had a really, really good season a few years ago, hasn't been able to replicate that. A guy who has a lot of problems staying healthy. You know, that said, I mean, being a left-handed pitcher in Baltimore, you get a bit of an upgrade, you know, with Mount Baltimore out there in left field. Also, you know, the Orioles dealing from positions of strength, right? I mean, their core is very much locked in place. They felt like they had guys with higher ceilings than Norby and Stowers, and I don't blame them for that thought. So it's an overpay on the surface. It's not an overpay probably for Baltimore and where they currently stand in terms of their player personnel. And they need pitching. I mean, they need pitching bad. The other thing is, I mean, Rogers is not a rental guy. Rogers will be around for a little while here. This is not Houston dramatically overpaying for Yusei Kikuchi, where they gave up Jake Bloss, who's going to be a starter for several years in this league, and Joey Loperfido, not to mention gave up Billy Wagner's kid in that deal as well. So, you know, I think that when you compare the two deals side by side, I like what Baltimore got in Rodgers because of the control that they have, because they still need pitching for next year. Kyle Bradish is going to miss a big chunk of next year. I think Dean Kramer's a fine number five, but they needed to fill some guys in. And I think between Eflin and Rodgers, you know, they really upgraded this rotation for a deep playoff series, which is what they were looking to do.
Yeah, just when you think you have a ton of starting pitching, right? Kyle Bradish and John Means go down, and it's back to square one for Baltimore. I'm kind of shocked, though, especially at the price they paid Norby and Stowers, that they couldn't work Tanner Scott, undoubtedly the best reliever, a pure rental. He's a free agent this offseason, into that deal, even if it meant, you know, another lesser prospect piece. What do you think the Marlins, I mean, we're seeing what starting pitching is going for. What do you think they might be able to net for Scott? Do you have a lean on where he goes? It feels like every team is in on him right now, but what are your thoughts? The Marlins aren't done.
No, I can't imagine that the Marlins are done. I mean, you know, there's still a lot of time for relievers to get moved here as well. You know, the trade deadline's 6 o'clock Eastern time, so still plenty of time. Reliever deals are pretty much the easiest to try to complete because they're in such high supply. They're also in high demand, so, you know, teams are able to weigh multiple offers for these guys. I mean, there's a lot of teams that could use bullpen help on an annual basis. You know, I think we saw it again last night. The Houston could use some more bullpen help with Hader giving up the three-run shot to Michael Taylor there. I think they get, you know, a pretty good return, especially if they're going to kind of play their leverage as late as they possibly can into the deadline here. You know, I know that Dustin was talking about this when I came on, you know, prior to the first segment that I did and then talk about during the break. You know, what happens with the high upside starting pitching arms, a Jack Flaherty? I don't think there's any chance at this point that Garrett Crochet or Tarek Skubal get traded. I think Flaherty still will. I think somebody will pay that price. And frankly, with Garrett Cole getting scratched, I mean, maybe the Yankees have a little bit more urgency there. I'd keep an eye out for Atlanta with Jack Flaherty. I think Atlanta will be willing to trade one of their fringy major league-ish type of arms, whether that's AJ Smith-Shawver, Hurston Waldrop, somebody like that to Detroit, and maybe another player or two. I think Atlanta might be a player for a splashy deal here before the deadline.
I'm glad you said that because you and I were way on when Spencer Strider went down. We were buy on the Phillies. Phillies going through a rough patch. Still think they win the division. However, the Atlanta Braves are down to 12-1 to win the World Series. And I get they're missing Acuna, and I get they're missing Strider, but this is a core that's been through it and done it before, and that number feeling kind of juicy, especially the addition of Soler, who I don't think is a sexy ad by any means, Adam, but am I crazy in thinking Atlanta at 12-1 is kind of a juicy number?
Well, I mean, I'll put my tinfoil hat back on for a second here. If offense is going to take off, if we're going to start seeing more power, guys like Matt Olson, Austin Riley, who have not had seasons up to their usual standards, they might kind of take off here in the second half a little bit. And obviously Soler is a guy with tremendous power. This has been a bad offense all year long, particularly against right-handed pitching. If they can kind of get that going and they add maybe a Flaherty type arm, something like that. I don't know if you get Chris Sale to the finish line healthy, but Spencer Schwellenbach looks really, really good. Grant Holmes all of a sudden looks like a piggyback kind of guy. All of a sudden, I think Atlanta has the makings of being a team that can make a run. They'd have to get through Philadelphia in the playoffs in all likelihood, which has been kind of their, you know, kryptonite over the last 2 years. But I think that they're looking at this thing. They're looking at league-wide offense and saying, you know what? Our guys who are underperforming are going to get it going. Let's go get a Jack Flaherty. Let's go get one of these arms that gives us a bit, you know, more upside in the rotation. I think that's something that they will look to do here before 6 o'clock. And I think they could potentially grab another reliever, even though they got Luke Jackson already.
Great stuff. By the way, if you want to react in 10 seconds or less, Andrew Chafin headed to the Texas Rangers.
That's 80
three
to
games
one.
Under 500 and buying.
80 to 1.
And they got Josh Jung back off the injured list. That's a big lift for the Rangers.
I might be betting 80 to 1 in break.
They're reaching out about Michael Conforto as well. Much more deadline talk to come on Sharp Money. Hour 2 up next.